You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. Chuck Norris doesn't do podcasts. Because you had better already know what he thinks and agree or die. Alternative Chuck Norris Facts. Unless you've been under a rock for the last quarter of a century, your first thought upon hearing the name Chuck Norris is probably to be reminded of the innumerable jokes about him, frequently under the heading Chuck Norris Facts. Some of my personal favorites include: a zombie once bit Chuck Norris. The zombie was immediately healed back to life. Then Chuck Norris killed him. There is no theory of evolution, just a list of animals that Chuck Norris allowed to live. Chuck Norris counted to infinity. Twice. Death once had a near Chuck Norris experience. And of course, I could go on and on. But I thought some of you might be interested in hearing some actual facts about the man behind the jokes. Carlos Ray Norris, that's his birth name, was born in 1940 in Oklahoma. Other than having an alcoholic father, his childhood was relatively uneventful. As a young man, he joined the Air Force in 1958 and served a 4-year stretch as an air policeman. During part of that time, he was stationed in South Korea, where he became interested in the martial arts. He took up training in Tangsudo, an art not unlike modern Taekwondo, earning his black belt before leaving the Air Force and returning to civilian life. He soon began trying his hand at Point Karate Tournament Competition in 1964, with mixed but promising results. In case you don't know, point fighting is not kickboxing. Chuck Norris never competed in kickboxing. Point fighting is a sport in which two competitors meet in a square area, usually marked by tape on the floor, and each fighter attempts to score on the other with kicks, punches, and other hand strikes. When I say score, I don't necessarily mean to make contact, but I'll discuss the amount of contact later. There are usually 7 officials: a scorekeeper, a timekeeper, a referee, and 4 corner judges, one standing at each corner of the taped-off fighting area. The fighting goes along uninterrupted until the referee or one of the corner judges sees what they think is a point being scored, and then that official shouts, "Point." The referee then stops the action, brings the two fighters to the center, and polls the corner judges. If a majority of them say that a point was indeed scored, the point is awarded. In any case, the match then resumes at the center of the fighting area. This process continues, starting and stopping the action, until the allotted time runs out, or until a certain point total is achieved by one of the fighters, that required total frequently being either 3 or 5 points. What constituted a point? Great question. In theory, it's when a competitor executes a technique that would have been effective or decisive had it actually landed full force on the opponent. Especially in the 60s, when Chuck Norris was active in point fighting, this American sport was an organizational hot mess. There was very little in the way of uniform rule sets at these events, and what governing bodies did exist were small and weak, and didn't communicate with each other very well. Every other tournament held in small-town USA was given an overinflated title, often something like the North American Championships, or even World Championships, neglecting to mention that competitors were nearly all U.S. citizens from within a day's drive of the tournament. This effect was also reflected in the advertising literature of many, if not the majority, of commercial martial arts schools in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. In virtually every city and town to which I traveled in those days, the Yellow Pages, that's where you looked in the days before the internet. Anyway, the Yellow Pages sported ads declaring that the head instructor was a world champion. Getting back to the actual point fighting tournaments, there were competitive divisions for each traditional belt rank, each with several weight divisions. Until the mid-1970s, no protective equipment was worn by the competitors. As a matter of fact, it had not yet been invented. It was bare feet and bare knuckles. The amount of actual contact that was permitted to be made by the competitors with their strikes varied widely, depending on who was promoting the event, ranging from no contact to the face and head, and light contact to the body at one end of the spectrum, to moderate contact to the face and head, and hard contact to the body at the other end. In general, there was more contact allowed in the higher belt divisions than in the lower ones. Accurate records of who competed in which tournament and who won in which division are not complete for the period in which Chuck Norris competed, many of them having been lost to history. If this all sounds pretty lame to you, I agree. I myself competed in lots of these events in the 1970s and early 80s. I did pretty well in the winning department and still have a bunch of trophies boxed up in my basement. But in the long term, I found the sport unrealistic and unfulfilling and moved on to other martial pursuits. But in those days, unless you wrestled in high school or took up boxing or judo, point fighting was the only competitive fighting game around for many areas of the country. In 1965, Mr. Norris began a 5-year run of doing very well on the point competition circuit, competing in his last event in 1970. He compiled an outstanding record against the likes of Joe Louis, Alan Steen, Louis Delgado, Skipper Mullins, Tony Telliners, Steve Sanders, and Ron Marchini. In his last couple of years of competing, some of Mr. Norris's matches came under the new rubric of professional karate. This essentially means that the fighters had a long competitive pedigree, were paid a small pittance, and were allowed to hit each other harder. But it was still essentially the start-stop pace of point fighting. Chuck Norris's autobiography and his Wikipedia page each make a claim that he won the middleweight professional karate championship in 1968, and that he held this title for 6 years. Keep in mind that every other tournament in the country was referred to as one kind of championship or another. As for the figure of 6 years, well, professional karate began in the U.S. in 1968, and its last year of existence was 1970. Chuck Norris, as I've already pointed out, fought his last match in 1970. Now, how one can arrive at the figure of 6 years from all that is beyond me. Now, I don't want you to think that this is a hit piece aimed at Mr. Norris. He was, after all, a very good point fighter, one of the best of his era. I just don't see why whoever attempted to inflate his record felt the need to do so. In any case, despite the financial gain implied by the term professional karate, the amount of prize money from such events was nowhere near enough to live on. Chuck Norris dealt with this problem in the same way many of us had. He opened a commercial karate school, in his case in Torrance, California, in the greater Los Angeles area. One school eventually grew to become a chain of schools, a chain that exists to this day. Another development in his life at about this time happened in 1968 when Mr. Norris met Bruce Lee at a tournament in New York City. Mr. Lee was there as a visiting celebrity. This status was due to his role as Kato on the TV series The Green Hornet. Bruce Lee was impressed with Chuck Norris's competition skills. They each lived in the L.A. area, and after meeting, they got along well enough that Lee invited Norris to become a regular training partner. Norris agreed, and the training relationship lasted until about 2 years later, when Bruce Lee moved to Hong Kong to make movies. Bruce Lee had similar training relationships with other famous point fighters, like Joe Louis and Mike Stone. But when he was casting for the role of his opponent in the main fight scene of his 1972 film, Way of the Dragon, released in the U.S. under the title Return of the Dragon, Bruce Lee chose Chuck Norris. Prior to this, Mr. Norris had landed a bit part in a 1968 film entitled The Wrecking Crew. But his role as Bruce Lee's martial nemesis in arguably the best choreographed and executed one-on-one fight scene ever made drastically enhanced his future prospects in action films. And then, the next year, Bruce Lee suddenly and unexpectedly died, leaving a gaping void in the world of martial arts cinema. For the next several years, studios searched desperately for a new action star to fill that void. In 1977, Chuck Norris made his first bid to fill that void by starring in a very forgettable film entitled Breaker Breaker, in which he played a martial artist who drove a semi and kicked bad guys' asses. 2 years later, he starred in a marginally better film entitled Good Guys Wear Black. Of course, he then went on to star in a large number of action movies, most of which I elected not to watch. While he was technically proficient as a martial artist, I never found his fight scenes exciting, and his terrible acting and lack of charisma made it an even more tedious chore, at least for me, to sit through an entire Chuck Norris film. The truth is that I was spoiled by the work of Bruce Lee. In 1993, Mr. Norris began his long run in television as Walker, Texas Ranger. It ran through the 2001 television season. Despite the commercial success of the series, I've never been able to make it through an entire episode. One very positive thing I do have to say about Mr. Norris, though, is that, like Bruce Lee, and unlike the vast majority of his generation of striking martial artists, he was open-minded enough to become interested in the grappling side of the martial arts. He was in Rio de Janeiro on vacation in the 1980s when he met the Gracie family. At this point in martial arts history, the Gracies were pretty much unknown outside of Brazil. Mr. Norris was already a black belt in judo, so when he joined young Hickson Gracie on the mat, he expected to be able to at least make a good account of himself. But as Mr. Norris freely admits, it was like I had never had a grappling lesson before. He just played with me. He then rolled, which is what grapplers call sparring, with Hickson's father, Elio Gracie, who was about 75 years old at the time. Mr. Gracie got a little overzealous and choked Chuck Norris unconscious. After Mr. Norris regained his senses, Elio apologized profusely, worried that the action hero would take offense. But Chuck Norris, to his credit, was impressed. He began training in BJJ almost right away and continues to do so to this day. Most of it has been with the Machado brothers, one of the classiest groups in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Mr. Norris now holds the rank of third-degree black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu under the Machados. In 1990, Chuck Norris created his own style of martial arts called Chun Kuk Do, combining elements of Tang Soo-do, Japanese and Okinawan karate, and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Now, you might be curious about what Chuck Norris thinks about the many jokes made at his expense. The jokes first appeared on the internet in 2005, and are originally and mostly credited to one Ian Spector. Mr. Norris states on his website that he finds them funny. He says that he especially liked the joke that asserts that they wanted to put Chuck Norris's face on Mount Rushmore, but the granite wasn't hard enough for his beard. However, in 2007, Ian Spector published the first of many books of Chuck Norris facts, and Mr. Norris promptly filed a lawsuit against him for it. Apparently, earning income from the jokes was a step too far. But Mr. Norris dropped the lawsuit a year later. So, there you have a brief sketch of the man behind the jokes. Despite my lukewarm attitude towards his movie and TV appearances, I recognize that Chuck Norris is a very important part of the history of the martial arts in this country, and not simply fodder for a successful category of jokes. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, and check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. The Martial Brain t-shirts are now available. Email me at my website to find out details. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.